Good morning, 7:38 here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News, and joining us now by phone, we have Bruce Miller. He is the public defender for First Judicial Circuit. That's us. So he takes care of, well, you know, he's a public defender, and a very good article in the Pensacola News Journal about the new jail by Colin Warren Hicks and some of the problems that they are having there, especially from the perspective of the defense attorneys. I wanted to focus on this a little bit this morning. Bruce, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's start with the basics, because I think probably a lot of people don't have some of the just kind of basic terminology concepts in mind. What is the difference between an institution that is designed to be a punishment or a correctional institution on the one hand, and the kind of institution that our Escambia County Jail has to function as? What's the difference and why that's going to matter to our next kind of set of topics?
Well, most of the people that are in a county jail, which is what we have, although they call it correctional institution, are in there on pretrial. They're pretrial detainees, and that means that a pretrial detainee does not lose their rights. A pretrial detention is supposed to be used for a couple reasons. One would be to make sure someone does not flee and is available for trial. Another reason might be that they might pose, in the eyes of the court, a danger to the community. Pretrial detainees, it's not supposed to be punishment, and it's not supposed to be to rehabilitate somebody. A correctional facility or a penal institution is where somebody would be housed after they are convicted and sentenced by a judge. And 80% of the people in our jail, our new jail, are there in pretrial detention status.
And so just like we had the old central booking and detention facility, which of course got destroyed in the flood of 2014, and then we also have the main jail, which houses often, you know, the convicted people. Now the new jail facility, as you say, is mostly made up of pretrial detainees, people who have not lost their rights, they have not been convicted. Even if they have prior records, they're not in there for that exact reason. And so the reason that matters is because the nature of their confinement while they're on pretrial is it needs to be different than the confinement of people who have been convicted for a less than a year sentence?
Well, it's been kind of chiseled through time by the courts, but yes, essentially they do not lose any of their rights that they had before. So for example, if they had the right to vote, then that's not taken away, and they still should have access to and the ability to vote. They have their religious freedoms and everything else that would you or I would have. And so the one that obviously that concerns us is the right to access to the courts, which the Sixth Amendment actually which started in Gideon, which is over in Panama City back in 1963, said access to an attorney. So when that access starts to get restricted, then that's when issues come to light, and that's what this was all about.
You know, I did not realize Gideon Wainwright was out of Panama City. Interesting. So this is the reason that the article was written, and it was full of, I mean, as you say, very concerning things. What is it about the design of the new jail that has been problematic for you as a public defender and the rights of your clients who are on pretrial incarceration? What's the problem with the jail or the problems with the jail?
Well, I kind of focus specifically on in-person attorney-client contacts. They offer a video visitation, but the courts, you know, we made some concession during the pandemic because it was a pandemic, and we took advantage of and utilized things like video visitations to contact our clients. But the courts have actually held that things like Zoom and FaceTime are actually no substitute for a face-to-face in-person contact meeting between the attorney and client. So when the jail, when you walk in, they have a thing called the attorney suite, which had, one client meeting room that was partitioned by glass and several others that were actually video visitation rooms. The one room that had the glass had the partition and then a sound hole to speak through, and it was not up to constitutional standards. It was not soundproof. The conversations could be heard from either side. If you were in one of the other booths, or actually from outside in the waiting area, you could hear it. So that didn't work. And then I think there were five video visitation rooms where you could go to jail and video visit your client. I'm not sure why anybody would do that, since you have video visitation available on your iPhone or your iPad or whatever you have. And then they only had three of those rooms with the glass, which just are not enough. It's not enough. It could have been enough during the pandemic, but, you know, it's not going to be enough long term. It's not enough for now. We had wait times. I started getting feedback almost immediately from my attorneys that the wait times were long, could be up to an hour to get to see somebody. And that's just, with the workloads that we do, that's just too long. We can't function like that.
So your public defenders who work in your office, Bruce, were having to go wait an hour in order to get to an inadequate facility that was not protected to give you the kind of confidentiality that you're entitled to constitutionally with your clients. And then in addition, I was reading that there's a problem with being able to just do silly little things like pass papers back and forth in order to get things signed. Is that right?
Yeah, and I'm not sure people understand this one, but the preferred method and the one that we want, obviously, is in person, up front, no glass partitions, and that's the way we've done it for years. There are a number of things that require a signature. For example, a lot of the people that we represent might have mental health issues. Therefore, we need to get releases for medical institutions. Each one of those medical places might come up with their own release form that could require a notarized signature. If you have to have a notary sign it, you cannot just give that paperwork. You can't mail it to them and get it back. You can't give it to somebody else and have them return it. And obviously, a notary has to actually witness the signature and then authenticate that it was signed by the person who said they signed it. But we have written plea agreements. We go through discovery with our clients. Sometimes that's digital discovery and it's on a computer, and you can't hold up a computer to a little sound hole in a window and expect to have any meaningful comprehension by the person sitting on the other side of that window.
I mean, I was even reading, you'd like give a paper to a corrections officer and he'd go around and out and around. I mean, just, it's crazy the way. Anyway, I got other questions. We're talking to Bruce Miller. He is the public defender for Judicial Circuit 1. Did Escambia County come and get your input on the jail before it was built?
Well, that, I think, was one of the issues that kind of activated the launch sequence, if you want to call it that, on this. That, no, we look forward to having the new jail built because there were all kinds of promises of, you know, what it would provide and those kind of things. But, no, during the design process, I was not contacted, nor were any of the other members of the Criminal Defense Bar contacted. And so we found that a little illuminating on how serious they took it. But, and then that's part of the issue, is they should not consider the attorneys showing up to be a distraction or, you know, an unpleasant thing for them to have to deal with. It's part of what they are supposed to provide constitutionally, which is access to the attorney for the pretrial detainees.
Pardon me, but I'm just so dumbfounded that we didn't come and ask one of the major constituent users of the new facility what they thought were important design criteria to be built into. That's just amazing. After we discovered that it's not right, has the county been willing to work with you guys to provide solutions?
Yeah, and I should say that our office, the Public Defender's Office, always had a great relationship with the Escambia County Jail and the people that work there. They're very professional in the past. Everything's been really good. So when the new jail opened, it was kind of a surprise. It seemed to be more than just design flaws. It seemed to be some policy changes that we had to deal with. And those sort of things. But yes, I did. We met, we talked, and I think they acknowledged that some of the problems that we pointed out were real. They have indicated that they would try to remedy open up more rooms for us to meet with clients, and they were going to remedy some of the pass-through issues with paperwork so we could get that signed, as well as trying to facilitate our ability to show discovery, which is, you know, talk to our client about what their cases are about, which they have an absolute fundamental right to hear of and learn. So, but yeah, they've been receptive, and hopefully we're on the right track.
Well, that's good news. I mean, you know, a remedy after the fact is never going to be as good as an initial design, but still, you know, that's helpful that they've been working with you, and good to hear that you have a good relationship with them. Just a last quick question on a slightly different topic. I know with COVID there was a huge backlog of cases, and you know, people's right to a speedy trial was being interfered with because they didn't have the ability to get processed through. Have we come out of that yet? Are we still in a backlog? How does it compare currently to normal?
Well, it's a really interesting question, and I talk frequently with the other elected public defenders around the state. There's 20 of us in the state of Florida, and it's a little bit different situation in each one of the jurisdictions. We definitely have a backlog here in the First Judicial Circuit. You mentioned speedy trials. That's one of the things that's been an issue because it's been suspended since March of last year. And it's frustrating because we don't have any way to bring those cases up, and the legislature just gave the courts $10 million. That's not for us. That's for the courts to process the backload, and I don't see that we're actually moving forward. The speedy trial thing interests me because the Surgeon General has not renewed their state of emergency that was done by the Surgeon General, which in my view was what gave the Supreme Court and the chief judges of each circuit the authority to suspend speedy trial.
Right.
So if that's gone, then, you know, we need to take a look at that and file whatever we need to file to keep things moving. But, I mean, I'm hopeful that we'll get back on track here soon, but we're still chugging along.
All right. Well, Bruce Miller, it's good work that you do. It's important work that you do. I appreciate you spending some time with us, even though you're even out of the area this morning at a conference, but I appreciate you taking a few minutes with us. Bruce Miller, he is the public defender for Judicial Circuit 1. Thank you so much for the time. Thanks for the work, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks.